Whoever loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it.
For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go out and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "Friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last.
Okay, thank you, Lenny and Matthew. Well, as we continue in this series on grace, I want you to realize that I have prepared this series as support as we began Celebrate Recovery. I think that began, what, last May? We began our sermon series this last September. And I think the church should always be about grace. And certainly, I believe that Celebrate Recovery is about grace that is very practical, very much needed. So I want to say some things today that will kind of help us along that route just a little bit. I asked several ladies if I could use their name and some of their testimony in Celebrate Recovery to kind of introduce this thought today. Last Friday night, Kathy Patterson, many of you know Kathy, but Kathy retold her testimony and said something like this when she began. She said, "Hi, I'm Kathy, a believer in Jesus Christ, struggling with codependency and control issues." And then she gave a wonderful testimony that probably took 15 minutes or so, and she talked. And Kathy, I want you to know how proud I am of you. It was very encouraging for all of us to be able to hear that. Kathy said something some time back that struck a note with me, and I've kept it there, and I'm going to use it today, and I'm going to use it sometime in the future. But she said, about 18 years ago in the church, she went to a gathering of ladies, and she told about some very deep hurts in her life, some deep pains, and she was rebuked and told that they didn't really want to hear these sad stories, these hurtful stories. They only wanted to hear happy stories. Is that right, Kathy? They only wanted to hear happy stories. And so Kathy said, "You know, I just buried that. I didn't bring it up again." And so those hurts have been in her life until she went through Celebrate Recovery and was able to bring out those hurts and to find healing through the grace of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So thank you, Kathy, for letting me remind you. By the way, if you think the church is only about happy messages and so forth, we're going to be greatly disappointed today, I assure you. All of us. Secondly, Donna Robinson, my neighbor. She's been in my small group. I love Donna and love Kathy. But Donna has a testimony that says, "Hi, I'm Donna, and I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm recovering from abandonment and rejection and working on control issues." Donna also has a wonderful testimony, but it talks about pain in her personal life, things that she's working through. I won't go into detail, but Donna, thank you for the courage of your testimony and your faith and the healing that you have found. And then the third one is the preacher's wife, my wife. And she says, "Hi, I'm Elaine, a believer in Jesus Christ, struggling with hurts from rejection and losses." Now, I know about a lot of those hurts, and I know a lot about those losses. Because I'd have to say, yes, I'm Daryl, a believer in Jesus Christ. I'm suffering from hurts and losses in the same way that she has, and many of them are from ministry, as many of you know. And from today's lesson, I want you to know that hurts and losses are true with every one of us, aren't they? Are we just here to hear happy messages? Because you see, grace is a wonderful, sweet sound. It's something that we can sing at the top of our voices, but it also echoes into our hearts, in the pains of our hearts, and the experience of our lives. And I think as we come to those scriptures that we looked at, the one in Matthew chapter 10 that Matthew read, Jesus talks about finding our life. And if we find our life, then we've lost our life. But then he goes on to say, if we've lost our life, if we lose our life, we will have found our life. Now, when he talks about lost and found here, I want you to think of those terms in terms that might help us understand this just a little bit more. And that is in terms of winning and losing. Isn't that what he's talking about? Because when we find our life, we truly find who we are. Most of the times in life, it's trying to find a life that is filled with things that will somehow make us happy. And probably number one on that list is money, isn't it? If only we had enough money. Have you ever thought that way? Nah, nobody's never thought that way, have they? If only I had more money. It's generally always more than what you've got. That we could sort of live in the glamour. We could go on vacations. We could kind of live in the glitz. That would be finding our life, maybe finding our dream, right? Or how about if we, we're a young child? You know, sometimes young children dream of growing up. Why is that? Maybe they have hurts and pains. They feel so limited. But if only they were old enough to drive the car. Do you feel that way, young people? If only I were old enough that someone would love me or I could love them. I could get on with my life. If only I were an adult, I could put on makeup or I could, you know, do other things. Or suppose we are going to college and we're thinking, man, if I could just get that college degree, if I could get that degree or maybe the master's degree, then I could get that secure job, you know, that everybody is after. But I could get that job and then I could be happy. I could find my life and who I really am. And I think some of us are that way about church. Do you think so? That if we could find the right church that would make us happy with all the programs that we like and enjoy, then certainly we would be happy. And maybe we even suggest that if we have experience, because, you know, experience is a good thing. If we've grown up in church or we have a feeling about church because we've gotten more and more knowledgeable and maybe we participated in church, then we will be happy. Is that the way? Because we found our life. Well, I'm suggesting to you that everybody wants to win. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. If you become a winner, if you have found your life in these things, you have truly lost the real life. Now, where do you discover this real life? Jesus said it's by losing your life. So I want you to take this, what I'm going to say, in the context of the parable we're going to look at. Jesus says the only way to find your life is to become a loser. You hear that? Become a loser of your life and let your life be found in another direction. And that's where grace comes in. You will find and discover that it is not in this pursuit of your life, but in the pursuit of Jesus Christ. And that's what this story tells us about that we're looking at today. It's a parable. Maybe you're familiar with it, but let's try to use a little imagination on it. Here's a large landowner that's planted just an enormous amount of grapes. So he's going to produce a harvest of grapes. Now, I don't know if this is as big a vineyard as Ernest and Julia Gallo have, but it's a good-sized vineyard. And so when the crop is ready, he's got to get all of that in. Now, I've seen some crop people that have had huge farms in Oklahoma up through Kansas and some of the places where the Snyders are familiar with. But, you know, when those crops are ready, they've got to have, they're out there 24-7 almost getting that wheat or the other crops in. They've got to have help. And there's people that just come along with large combines and machinery, go all the way up the grain belt to get that crop in while it is time and before the weather changes. I think that maybe this is what's happening here. The crop is ready. It's almost due. And maybe the weather report's out. We're going to have some bad weather. We got to get this crop in. Now is the time. And so the guy goes off into town, and he's going down to the local maybe cantina or someplace like that. And he's going to round up whoever's there that day, the workers that are hired for that day. And he gets as many as he can. He needs a lot of workers to bring the crop in. And he agrees with them, this is very important, he agrees to pay a denarius for a day and send them into his vineyard. Now, if you're reading the old King James Version, for example, it says a penny a day, and King James needs to really be translated because nobody worked for a penny. So whatever you might say about this, it's a day's wage. So just to make it fair, maybe even generous, how about if we pay $10 an hour, and that'd be, say, working 12 hours, that'd be $120. That'd be a pretty fair, decent wage, you think? Think we could do with that? At least that would make good arithmetic. So $120 a day, that's what they've agreed on. They're going to work for 12 hours a day. They will get what is due them, wage. Now, the guy takes them out. He goes into the field. They start working. He realizes, man, I need more workers. So he's heading back in with his trucks. He's got to find some more workers. He finds some 3 hours later, and he is now no longer negotiating with him. He says, whatever is right, I'll pay you. So we're going to designate him Mr. Right. I'll pay you whatever is right. And so they say, okay, that's fine. We're going out there. We're going to work for 9 hours. That would be what? Do the math. We said $10 an hour. That would be $90 for the day. So they know at least what they're going to get. And I suppose that any worker that goes out in the field is probably going to be whispering and finding out what the per diem rate is, right? What is the per diem rate you're being charged? Because we're not working a whole day, and we want to know what we're going to be paid at the end of the day. So they start to work, and he says, man, I really need some more workers. So he's back out to the cantina trying to find some more people that he can scatter out to get back into the vineyard. And he finds them. It is now the sixth hour, which would be about noon. And then notice again, he goes at the ninth hour. So he's trying to get as many people as he can, but somehow, you know, there's some other vineyard people out there. There's some other crop that are trying to get these workers. So he gets all that he can, and you can do the math. At the 6 hour, how much would he pay him? $60? Okay, 6 hours for $10 an hour, so $60 for the rest of that day. And then the ninth hour, where that would mean 3 hours of work. So we would expect $30 to those people. And he gets them out there, and it looks like, man, we're going to finish the day, and we just, oh, if I only had some more workers. So he says, I'm going to go back in one more time. Just 1 hour left. Now, I sense that he is desperate here. Because what I sense is going on, there's some people that are just kind of hanging out. They hadn't been hired that day. I don't know if they're sipping on tequila or they're just relaxing or whatever's going on. But you know what I'm saying? They haven't gone out to work. Maybe they slept late that day. For some reason, maybe they're just hanging out. They're not working. He says, you know, it's only an hour, but, you know, if you guys would get off of your duffs, I'd be glad to pay you. Well, I don't know. It's only an hour, but okay, we'll go. Now, Mr. Wright is going to pay them for 1 hour. Do the math. How much is it worth? $10, right? But they didn't agree on that. He's going to pay them whatever is right. So they go out there, and I want you to see these guys as probably the ones who are not as prone to work a full day. Maybe they're the bums, I'm suggesting. They're the ones that in life hadn't treated them fair, and they've gotten this 1 hour, and they got a shot to get a little extra food and a little something. So he takes them out there, and they work an hour, and then it's payday. Send them home with a day's pay. And so he says, man, you know, I've got a really good harvest here. I need these workers again, so tells his foreman, just wait a minute. Let me pay them. And I want you to call the last ones in here first. The ones that I got that only work 1 hour, and then we're going to pay them first. So imagine now you're standing in that line, you get paid, you open your pay envelope, and imagine one of the girls that's working. She opens it up and she says, "Man, there's been a big mistake here. I got $120 in this, and I only work for 1 hour." Now, well, I want you to see her feet as she's moving, not back to tell them about the mistake. She's moving out of there before somebody discovers her. And maybe her boyfriend's right behind her, and he says, "Hey, what's going on?" She said, "Well, how much do you get paid?" "I got $120. So he checks his pay. He said, "Man, I got $120. You see the flap going on? Everybody that worked 1 hour is getting $120. Pretty neat, huh? And they're thinking, "Man, you guys have worked hard all day. If y'all just come out for 1 hour, think of what y'all would have got." Okay. So if you look at this whole parable and begin to scrutinize the other workers who worked hard, they're beginning to think, "Well, you know, if that's what he paid them for 1 hour, let's see, I worked 3 hours, that would be 360. Or if I worked 6 hours, that would be what, 720? You see the math? That would be over $1,000 for somebody that worked all day. Surely, in terms of fairness, we're going to make a bounty off of this, right? But when everybody begins to get their pay schedule and open it up, is that the case? Everybody gets $120 a day. And all of a sudden, some people are really upset, especially those that labored all day. Now, the ones that maybe got a little extra from going at 9 or working 6 hours or 3 hours, maybe they say, "Well, man, we got a real bonus today." But those that worked all day long that agreed on a price, they're upset. "This isn't fair. This isn't right. We labored all day long, and we ought to get more because look at what you're paying them." Does that sound fair? It sounds pretty fair to me, doesn't it? Sounds like a good argument. What we need to understand is there is nothing fair about God. There is nothing fair about grace. If you want fairness, guess what? God will give you the law. And he tried that for a couple thousand years. And people couldn't bear the law. People got under the law and got crushed under it. They couldn't live under it. And God said, "This isn't working. This isn't working. So if I really love these people, I've got to do something else. I've got to reach out with those people and tell them that you're never going to be good enough. And you're never going to be able to live up to the law. It may give you some guidance and tell you what I would like you to do, but I love you too much to let you bear under that. So I will give you my love and my forgiveness through grace. And that will be worth more than everything." That's what our whole series has been about. Getting what we don't deserve. It's not fair, is it? No, it's not. It's better than fair. But notice what this guy says. The owner of the vineyard says, "Look, isn't it my money? Can I do what I want to? Is your eye envious? Is your eye evil because I have done this great thing?" And that's the real question that we're asking here. Does grace make some people jaundice? Does it make some people think that somehow we're throwing people out into just it's okay to sin or it's okay to do anything? Not at all. But it's letting us know that grace is the only way that God can really redeem us and to transform us into something besides the people that are striving, constantly failing, and still wanting to win in life. Now, let me take you back just a few stories on this and see how this goes. Before I do that, look at the last statement here. Jesus says, "The last will be first, and the first will be last." And then at the end of chapter 19, he says the same thing. Many who are first will be last, and the last will be first. What's another way of saying who's last? Losers. And who is it that's first? Winners. You get that? And I think sometimes we don't get that about grace and about God. Now, let me just demonstrate that with Jesus. There's some wonderful stories in the Bible, like the prodigal son that we looked at. The prodigal son could have been a winner. He thought he was. He was born into a wealthy family, had everything going for him. But when he squandered it all, when he got involved in sin, what happened? He lost it all, and down in the pig pen, he said, "I've got to go to my father and try to just say, I've sinned." When he begins to admit that his life as a winner and trying to seek his life and his fortune has failed, the only way that he can succeed is by losing. And when he admits that he has lost all, then God says, I can work with it because I love you so much that I will not let you go. Now, the problem with grace is that it also has an element of judgment. And I want us to see this here because in chapter 19, we have some people that are coming in and they say, my goodness, Jesus. And he's talking about divorce. It's not put there just because it's a saying about divorce and this divorce issue that we talk about. It's about people that are trying to claim that they have lived up to the law. And we want to know, Jesus, why you aren't calling people to live up to the law. What about this divorce issue? But you see, the Pharisees believed that they had lived up to the law. They were so good. They were winners. They were the first in line in the knowledge of God. And Jesus says, you think you're winners? Look at all the poor women that you've hurt. In the New Testament era, all the divorce people were, the people that were considered guilty parties were always the women. Now that's the truth. And so these Pharisees, Jesus says, look what you've done to these poor women. You think you're innocent? That's not the way it should be with my disciples. It shouldn't be like this. And so that's really where this discussion about divorce is going. And then Jesus says, well, the disciples say, look, maybe it's better not to marry, if that's the way. And he says, you've got it wrong too. It's not about marriage. It's not about celibacy. It's about relying upon God and relying upon his power. Now, if we're going to claim that we've won, that we've never had a problem in life, I'm going to tell you, a number of years ago, I was so glad to say that my brothers, I've got a brother that's got five children, all went to Abilene Christian University. They all turned out great. No divorce in the family. Got another brother's got three children. None of them divorced. Everything was well. And I'm thinking, no, this is great. This is great. I can say I've got family. Look at the Christian education. It's paid off. One night when we lived in Memphis in transition, a brother called me up and said, we need to pray for Jill. Because her husband has come out that he is a homosexual. And it is literally destroying the family. Within a year of time, the older son that had children and so forth, his wife left him for somebody else. Now, there's always two sides to every story, but you just place it. What I want you to sense there is a lot of pain there. And my brother, and maybe myself too, they were kind of bragging that we've got this situation that's golden and we're so delighted. And yes, we were delighted. But we were deeply hurt by divorce. And we're pained by abhorrency. And my other brother had this younger daughter that just didn't live up to their standards. You know, living with somebody. Had a baby out of wedlock. Deep pain, deep hurt. Now, I can't hold my head up and say, well, you know, I've never gone through that. That's close enough to me to say that's a deep pain. That's a deep hurt. I can say, well, you know, I'm glad that I've never had that, but, you know, I've had other pains. That's the whole point about this. It's not about your pain versus my pain. It's the point that if we try to seek the shape in life that says we have no pain, we have no problems, we are so much like the winners who either knew all or had all. Now, keep looking on here a little bit. See these children that came to Jesus? I think it's put there because in the ancient world, children were part of what we call losers. They should be in the background. They shouldn't come to the foreground. And the people that kind of control Jesus' atmosphere shouldn't let children in there. They make too many mistakes. They're too vocal. They're too playful. Serious business, this religious stuff. Jesus said, let them come in here. Let them come in here. You might regard them as losers, but I don't. And how about this rich young man? He seems to have it all together. He's got all the money. And Jesus says, well, wait a minute. How about your religious life? He said, I've done all these things from my youth up. Jesus said, I know what you need to do. You need to go and sell everything you've got and then come follow me. You see, when Jesus looks at your heart and he knows what you're claiming to be a winning situation that puts you right up there as having found your life, then he says, that's not the truth. And we're going to show this. And the guy walks away. He can't let hold of it. Why? Because he has found his life. And the disciples look at him and said, Lord, who can be saved? Who can be saved? Is this the way? And Jesus says, it is hard for a rich man. It's hard for a person who has found their life to lose it in whatever shape that is. But Peter then says, look, we've left everything to follow you, Lord. Look at this. We've left everything to follow you. He says, have you left everything? You've got a lot to gain in the life to come. You've got a lot to gain. You've got housing. You've got kingdom. You've got all kinds of things. But what he's telling Peter is when you regard your life as something lost to yourself, remember what term we used. If you will consider yourself a loser for Jesus Christ, then you can be found in him. That's what the Apostle Paul was saying. I had a life, wonderful life, but that's the life that I lost, that I might come to know Jesus Christ, my Lord. Now, these wonderful women here have told us about their pains in life, and they were honest enough to say that they have hurts, they have issues. And I'm the same way. I have hurts and issues. And sometimes in church, we don't always feel comfortable about talking about our hurts and our pains. And I think that's what Celebrate Recovery is about. It's about saying we do have hurts. We have pains. We can't say that we're going to be able to make life as a sort of a winner on our own. We're not going to be among the first. But if we can say we have lost our life as a way of finding life and true happiness, then we're not just saying that church is about happy stories. It's about successes. It's about coming to grips with the fact that we are losers in Jesus Christ. And he says, now I can do something with that. My grace can work with losers and bring healing into your life and bring compassion. And I think that's what this story is telling us right here at the last. The last will be first. The losers will become winners. But those who insist on winning their way will be the losers. Well, let me just ask you this story. As God reaches out to you with his forgiveness and love, his grace, do you kind of insist on trying to be happy and trying to be religious and trying to be wealthy and trying to seek your own life? Or are you willing to admit that you're a loser? Then God says, I can work with that. How about you today? Are you willing to come and admit that in your life? That you're a loser and you want to be found in Jesus Christ? That's God calling for you, saying, yes, we've got him. We can heal that. Let's stand and be singing.